I would like to start the interview by asking you how the situation in the region was at the time when the Islamic Revolution became victorious. How was the situation in the West Asian region? Particularly given that one of the important dimensions of the Islamic Revolution is its regional and international implications. What changes occurred in the regional equations following the Islamic Revolution, and what events have we witnessed? With the Islamic Revolution gaining victory, what took place in the region in general and in Lebanon in particular?
In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, first I would like to welcome you. If we go back to the past and observe the developments, we will find that very shortly before the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, a very significant incident took place in the region, namely the withdrawal of the Arab Republic of Egypt from the Arab-Israeli conflict and the signing of the Camp David Treaty. This event, due to the important and effective role of Egypt in the aforementioned conflict, had a very dangerous impact on the region, as well as on the Arab-Israeli confrontation over the issue of Palestine and the future of Palestine. After that incident, in the first place, it seemed that the confrontation was going on largely in favor of Israel. This was mainly because other Arab countries and Palestinian resistance groups were not able to confront major powers without the help of Egypt at that time. So, firstly, the occurrence of such an incident led to the emergence of a deep division among Arab countries. Secondly, you remember that at the time, there was a US-led Western bloc opposing the USSR. Therefore, there existed a split in our region, the gap between the countries associated with the Soviet Union, that is, the Eastern Bloc, and the countries depending on the United States, the Western Bloc. Accordingly, we could see a deep divide among the Arab countries in the region, and this gap had devastating consequences for the nations and, of course, also had an impact on the Arab-Israeli conflict. At the time, the Cold War between the Soviet Union and the United States essentially affected our region and its developments. In the case of Lebanon, it should be said that Lebanon is also part of this region, and thus, it has been severely affected by its developments, including Israeli actions, the Arab-Israeli conflict, and the divisions in the region. At that time, Lebanon faced domestic problems as well, and was suffering from the civil war. The Israeli enemy occupied parts of southern Lebanon in 1978, that is 1 year before the Islamic Revolution, and then created a security zone called the Border Strip on the Lebanese-Palestinian borders. The Israeli enemy, through this security zone, continued its daily aggression against Lebanon, its cities, villages, and people. Indeed, we faced a very serious problem. The Israeli occupation in parts of southern Lebanon and its daily aggressions. Israeli warplanes and their artillery bombed southern Lebanon. Abduction operations and multiple explosions by the Zionist regime continued in its worst form, and people were displaced following these brutal acts. These events also took place between 1977 and 1979, that is, not long before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The Israelis objected the existence of Palestinian resistance and operations carried out by Palestinians. However, this was just an excuse because Israel's runs of aggressions in southern Lebanon began in 1948, when Palestinian resistance was not present in southern Lebanon. Palestinian resistance set base in southern Lebanon in the late 60s and early 1970s, especially after the events in Jordan and the arrival of Palestinian groups from Jordan in Lebanon. It was in those circumstances that the Islamic Revolution of Iran gained victory. This victory came at a time when an atmosphere of despair was dominant in the Arab and Muslim world, and concern for the future was widespread. Egypt's withdrawal from the Arab-Israeli conflict and the signature of the Camp David Treaty, the imposition of a humiliating political process on the Palestinians and Arabs, as well as the weakness of the rulers of the Arab countries, all provoked the despair, grief, hopelessness, disappointment, and worry for the future at that time. Therefore, the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in such an environment revived the lost hopes in the region and among the nations to begin with, particularly the Palestinian and Lebanese people. This victory, the victory of the Islamic Revolution, also brought about the resurgence of the hopes of a nation that had been cornered by the existence of Israel, because the position of Imam Khomeini, may his spirit be blessed, regarding the Zionist project, the necessity of the liberation of Palestine, and standing shoulder to shoulder with Palestinian resistance groups, was clear from the beginning. Imam Khomeini believed in supporting the people of Palestine, liberating every inch of the land, and obliteration of the Israeli entity as a usurping regime in the region. Therefore, the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran created a growing hope for the future and increased a hundredfold the moral and motivation of the supporters of the resistance, as well as the resistance groups in the region. The victory of the Islamic Revolution also created a balance of power in the region. Egypt fled the fight against Israel, and the Islamic Republic of Iran entered. Therefore, the balance of power in the Arab-Israeli conflict was restored, and for this reason, the resistance project in the region entered a new historical phase. This was the starting point for the Islamic movement and jihad in the Arab and Muslim world, and among Shias and Sunnis alike. Imam Khomeini introduced several mottos regarding various subjects such as the question of Palestine, Islamic unity, resistance, facing and confronting the United States of America, stability and sustainability, trust and confidence of nations in God and in themselves, revival of faith in one's own power when confronting the arrogant, and towards the realization of victory. Undoubtedly, these mottos had a very positive and direct impact on the situation in the region at that time.
Besides the general atmosphere created in the world with the Islamic Revolution and the spirit blown into the people of the region by Imam Khomeini, reviving the resistance, do you recall any instance of Imam Khomeini's particular influence on the Lebanese resistance and the Hezbollah?
Yes, in the year 1982. If we want to talk about it, we should consider the liberation of Khorramshahr in Iran. The Israelis were deeply concerned about the war between Iran and Iraq, or Saddam's imposed war against Iran. For this reason, after the liberation of Khorramshahr, the Israelis decided to attack Lebanon. Of course, this action had its own root causes, and there was a profound connection between the victories in the Iranian front and the Israeli aggression against Lebanon. This was how the Israelis entered Lebanon, the Beqa region, Mount Lebanon Governorate, and Beirut suburbs. At that time, a group of scholars, brothers, and fighters had decided to form the Islamic Resistance and establish the Islamic Jihadi Foundation of the Movement of Resistance, corresponding to the aftermath of the Israeli invasion. By then, Israel had not penetrated in all of Lebanon and had only reached about half of Lebanon, that is 40% of Lebanon's total area. ‎100,000 Israeli soldiers entered Lebanon. They brought with them American, French, English, and Italian multinational forces on the pretext of maintaining peace. Meanwhile, there were militias in Lebanon who were involved with and collaborated with the Israelis. By pointing to these facts, I mean to picture how very, very bad the situation was at that time. Subsequently, a group of scholars, believers, and Mujahid brothers decided to launch a new movement for jihad in the name of Islamic resistance, which shortly afterwards was renamed Hezbollah. The formation of this front coincided with the decision of Imam Khomeini to send Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps forces to Syria and Lebanon to oppose and confront Israeli aggression. Initially, the intention was for the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps troops to fight alongside Syrian forces, as well as Lebanese and Palestinian resistance groups. But after some time, the scope of Israeli attacks became limited, so this was no longer a classic battlefield, and the need for resistance operations by popular groups was felt more than ever. It was at that time that Imam Khomeini replaced the mission of direct confrontation by the IRGC and Iranian forces, who had come to Syria and Lebanon, by offering help and providing military training to Lebanese youth, so that they, that is the Lebanese youth themselves, would be able to deal with the occupiers and carry out resistance operations. This is the first of Imam Khomeini's positions. Therefore, the mission of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps forces in Syria, as well as the Lebanese Bekaa region in Baalbek, Hermel and Janta, that is, where there were training bases, was changed to providing military training to the Lebanese youth. They taught the Lebanese youths the methods of warfare and provided them with logistic support. The mere presence of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in Lebanon at that time gave the Lebanese youth and resistance groups a purpose and a high spirit to stand up to Israel. Well, as I said earlier, it was decided that a large group would be formed and 9 representatives were selected on behalf of the pro-resistance brothers, including the martyr Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, to pursue this important issue. Naturally, I was not among these 9 people, because at that time I was young, about 22 or 23 years old. These 9 people traveled to Iran and met with the officials of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They also had a meeting with Imam Khomeini. During their meeting with Imam Khomeini, while offering a report on the latest developments in Lebanon and the region, they presented their proposal for the formation of an Islamic resistance front. They said to Imam Khomeini, "We believe in your guidance, your authority and walaya, and your leadership. Tell us what we need to do." In return, Imam Khomeini insisted that their duty was to resist and stand against the enemy in full force, even if you have limited means and are in smaller numbers. This is while Hezbollah had a smaller number of members then. He said, "Start from scratch, trust in the Almighty God, and do not wait for anyone in the world to help you. Rely on yourself and know that God helps you. I see you victorious." It was an amazing thing. Imam Khomeini regarded this path as auspicious, and thus the meeting during which our brothers met with him laid the foundation stone for the formation of the Islamic Resistance Front under the auspicious title of Hezbollah in Lebanon. At that time, our brothers told the Imam, "We believe in your guidance, authority, and leadership. But in any case, you are very busy, and you are at an old age, and we cannot allow ourselves to continuously disturb you about different issues and problems. And so, for this reason, we are asking you to name a representative to whom we can refer on various issues." Then he introduced Imam Khamenei, may God continue his oversight, who was the president at the time, and said, "Mr. Khamenei is my representative." Consequently, the relationship between Hezbollah and Ayatollah Khamenei, may God protect him, began from the very early hours of the establishment and foundation of this group. We were always in contact with him in different times. We met him frequently and gave him reports on the latest developments, and he always praised the resistance. I remember the issue of several Hezbollah martyrdom-seeking members. You know that the first experience of a martyrdom-seeking operation took place in Lebanon and was conducted by our brothers. The brothers sent a video file before publicizing it in the media containing oral testaments of those fighters seeking martyrdom who had carried out a major martyrdom operation in Lebanon and had shaken the invaders to their core. This video was played for Imam Khomeini, and he watched it and discussed it. The testaments were very beautiful and full of enthusiasm, mysticism, and love. After watching the testaments, Imam Khomeini said, "These are young, chivalrous people. All of them were young." He then said, "These are the true mystics." The fact is that the Imam was strongly affected by the testaments. Imam Khomeini's collaboration, support for, and attention to the resistance and Hezbollah of Lebanon continued until the very last day of his auspicious life. I remember about 1 or 2 months before the passing of Imam Khomeini, when he was ill and rarely met with domestic officials, and even less with foreign officials, I went to Iran as a member and an executive official of the Hezbollah Council and met with Ayatollah Khamenei, late Ayatollah Rafsanjani, and other Iranian officials, and asked if I could have a meeting with Imam Khomeini. I was told that he is ill and does not meet with anyone. I asked them to try, and they agreed to do their best. Then I went to the office of Imam Khomeini and put in a request for an appointment. At the time, one of our friends among Imam Khomeini's household, Sheikh Rahimian, may God protect him, who paid particular attention to the Lebanese, shared the matter with the late Sayyid Ahmad Khomeini. And I was informed on the second day to get ready for a meeting. Naturally, we were all surprised. I went to meet Imam Khomeini, and nobody else was there, not even Sayyid Ahmad. None of the foreign ministry's officials or IRGC staff, who would usually attend the meetings, were there. Sheikh Rahimian accompanied me to Imam's room, but then left and left me alone with Imam. I was overwhelmed and awed by his presence. Imam Khomeini was sitting on a high chair, and I sat down on the floor. Awestruck by his grandeur, I could not say a word. The Imam asked me to get closer. I went closer and sat next to him. We spoke and I handed to him a letter I had brought with me. The Imam answered the questions I had shared with him regarding the developments of that time in Lebanon, then smiled and said, "Tell all our brothers not to worry. My brothers and I in the Islamic Republic of Iran are all with you. We will always be with you." This was my last meeting with Imam Khomeini.
I wish we had time to hear more extensively from you about that time. Thanks again for the opportunity you gave us. You said that Hezbollah was formed and began its activity during a very difficult time. You correctly mentioned that Iran itself was dealing with an invasion of its borders. In Lebanon, the Zionist regime periodically attacked the people and committed murder and plunder. And in any case, Hezbollah began its work in such a different situation. You also said that Imam Khomeini referred you to Ayatollah Khamenei to be in touch with him.
From the very first moment of our relationship with Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, whom I call, in my own words, Mr. Leader, so let me use the same word, the leader, to refer to him, my brothers had a Hezbollah council within Hezbollah with about 7 to 10 members, which changed at each stage. Now, the members of this council always met with a leader during his presidency. Now, what I wish to say about that time, almost 7 years of Ayatollah Khamenei's presidency before the passing of Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace.
Was there a specific person to go between Hezbollah and Ayatollah Khamenei?
I get back to this point. The fact is that the leader particularly valued Lebanese groups and provided them with sufficient time. I remember meetings that sometimes lasted for 2, 3, or even 4 hours. He listened carefully to what we had to say. Our friends and brothers also described the issues for him in detail. As you know, at the time, they were not all on the same wavelength, and our brothers had different views. The leader listened to all of the comments, views, and opinions. And so, naturally, there was no Arabic language problem either, because he was fluent in Arabic and spoke it very well. He spoke Arabic beautifully. Nonetheless, he preferred to be accompanied by an Arabic translator. He usually spoke in Farsi, but had no need for translation when the Lebanese spoke in Arabic. His full mastery of the Arabic language contributed greatly to his deep understanding of the problems and the views of our Lebanese brothers. The important point is that, despite having full authority from Imam Khomeini, the leader tried to play the role of a guide and helped us make the decisions ourselves. I always remember that in every meeting, at that time, and after being appointed as the leader, whenever he wanted to comment, he would indicate, "My suggestion is." For example, he had reached a conclusion, but he would ask us to sit down, consult with each other, and make the correct decision. Indeed, the leader at that critical stage managed to play an important role, guiding the group in cultivating Hezbollah leaders and commanders intellectually, scientifically, and mentally, so that our brothers could make decisions confidently and by relying on their own capabilities, even during the most difficult situation. He would make comments, but he would refer to a Persian proverb that said, "The expediency of a country is recognized by its owners." His Eminence would say, "You are from Lebanon and thus have a better command of your affairs. We can only make a few comments and you can apply them, but it is you who will make the final decision. Do not wait for anyone to make decisions on your behalf." Therefore, the role of the leader in the training, growth, and swift development of Hezbollah was very significant. In the first year, our brothers went to Iran 2 or 3 times a year. That is, they would travel to Iran about every 6 months to learn about the Iranian officials' viewpoints regarding the developments in the region, as at that time, developments in the region were taking place very rapidly. Naturally, at that time, there was also the war, the 8-year imposed war against Iran, and its implications for the region. Therefore, our brothers constantly needed to exchange information, consult with, and get support from Iran. At that time, if our brothers were faced with an immediate and urgent problem, they would send me to Iran. Because I was younger than the others, and there was no systematic protection or anything similar in place for me, I was alone, carrying a bag with me. This means that my trips to Iran, since I was not well known, were not complicated and there was no security threat around me. On the other hand, I was acquainted with Persian language more than my other brothers in Hezbollah, and for this reason, they preferred me to travel to Iran. From the very beginning, there was compassion and affection between me and my Iranian brothers. My brothers in Hezbollah would tell me, "You like Iranians and the Iranians like you too, so you should travel to Iran." On behalf of my brothers in Lebanon, I met with the leader for 1 to 2 hours. Even when all issues had been discussed and I was prepared to leave, he would say, "Why are you in a hurry? Stay, and if there's anything left, let's discuss it." That stage was very important for Hezbollah, because Hezbollah had focused on fundamental issues, fundamental approaches, and fundamental goals. They made a collection of varying opinions, but we eventually managed to compile a single, united book. Now I can say that we have a unified viewpoint in Hezbollah. Different perspectives have been unified and consolidated due to the events and experiences that we have gone through, and thanks to the guidance, advice, and leadership of Imam Khomeini while he was alive, and of the leader after the passing of Imam Khomeini.
I wish there was more time to listen to your memories at length.
You will at some point say, "I wish."
Anyways, our time is very limited. Putting that period aside, now let's talk about 1989. When Imam Khomeini passed away, to the mercy of Allah. And our people and every devotee of the Islamic Revolution were mourning. Those moments were naturally critical moments for both our country and the devotees of the Islamic Revolution. Please explain briefly what the state of your affairs was. At the time when the Ayatollah Khamenei was chosen as the successor to Imam Khomeini, also tell us more about the events that you encountered at that time after Imam Khomeini's passing away in the regional and international arena. We had a very critical period at that time because that era coincided with the collapse of the Soviet Union, the beginning of American unilateralism, and the end of the Cold War. At the same time, we saw that the Zionist regime started talking about peace negotiations, and on the other hand, the Islamic Revolution was in a particular situation. Obviously, the Americans had plans for the post-Imam Khomeini era. We would like you to talk about those circumstances and describe them to us, and about how the leader responded to the important developments that took place at regional and international levels.
Well, as you know, during the lifetime of Imam Khomeini, members of Hezbollah of Lebanon and the supporters of the resistance had close ties with him, both intellectually and culturally. However, Hezbollah members were also emotionally and passionately dependent on Imam Khomeini. Like many Iranians who fought against Saddam's war on Iran, they really loved Imam Khomeini. Members of Hezbollah of Lebanon regarded him as an imam, a leader, a guide, a marja, and a father. I have never seen the Lebanese love anyone so much. Consequently, the demise of Imam Khomeini on that day brought about a mountain of sadness and grief to the Lebanese. A feeling definitely not less intense than the sadness and grief of the Iranians. This was the emotional connection between the Lebanese and Imam Khomeini. But on the other hand, there was a major concern at that time, and it was that the Western media were constantly talking about the post-Imam Khomeini era, claiming that the main problem was this man, and that Iran would collapse after him, and a civil war would break out, that there would be no substitutes for the leadership of the country. In this regard, a very intense psychological warfare had started in those years, in the last year of the glorious life of Imam Khomeini, particularly in the light of other incidents, including the dismissal of late Ayatollah Montazeri and other issues. For this reason, there were concerns. At that time, we were being told that your source of support, that is, the Islamic Republic of Iran, upon which you rely and in which have faith, will start a downfall and collapse after the passing of Imam Khomeini. That was the second issue. The third issue, regardless of the psychological warfare, was our lack of information about the situation after the passing of Imam Khomeini. We did not know what was going to happen after him, and what turn the events were going to take. So, we were worried. We were following up on the events after the death of Imam Khomeini on television. And when we saw national security and the calm in Iran, as well as the glorious presence of the Iranian people at his funeral, we regained some confidence and peace of mind. We were reassured that Iran would not go towards a civil war, nor would it collapse, and eventually the Iranians would choose a suitable leader in a reasonable and sincere atmosphere. We, like all Iranians, were waiting for the decision of the Assembly of Experts on this matter. The fact is that the election of Ayatollah Khamenei as the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran by the Assembly of Experts was unpredictable for the Lebanese, because we did not know Iranian figures properly, and we did not know if there was a better, more knowledgeably and more competent person to replace the leadership. We only knew the Iranian officials that we were in touch with. Electing Ayatollah Khamenei for this responsibility, surprisingly and unusually, made us feel happy, fortunate, and confident. I can say confidently that the moment when Imam Khomeini's successor was declared, all worries, all anxieties and ambiguities surrounding the future were totally gone. An amazing kind of tranquility took over our hearts. I believe that this incident happened by the grace and will of God, so that peace, assurance, content, and confidence would take over the believers' hearts. In the early hours after the appointment of Ayatollah Khamenei as the supreme leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, scholars, various communities, and members of Hezbollah sent him their messages of congratulations and declared allegiance with him as the leader of the Islamic Ummah, the leader of Muslims, and the Imam of Muslims. Of course, the Assembly of Experts did not appoint him to those titles, but to the title of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Nevertheless, all believers across the world sent messages to the leader and declared allegiance with him as the Imam, Wali al-Amr, and the leader of the Islamic Ummah. Just as with Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace. In any case, we passed through this stage. We started our relationship, and this relationship continued. After a short time, we traveled to Iran and offered our condolences for the passing away of Imam Khomeini, and we met with the leader. He was still at the presidential office and received people there. We pledged allegiance to him in person and directly. Our brothers told him, "During the lifetime of Imam Khomeini, you were his representative in the affairs of Lebanon, Palestine, and the region, as well as the president of Iran. So you had time for us. But now you are the leader of the Islamic Republic and all Muslims, and therefore perhaps you do not have enough time as before. So we would like to ask you to appoint a representative so that we do not disturb you continuously." And so at this moment, the leader smiled and said, "I am still young and I have time, God willing. I pay special attention to the issues of the region and the resistance, and therefore we will remain in direct contact with each other." Since then, unlike Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace, he has not appointed any representative to refer to about our issues. And so, naturally, we did not want to bother much. And we did not require much of his time, especially because in the first years, the early years of the establishment of the movement, he was involved in everything. The principles, goals, foundations, criteria, and guidelines that we had provided a solution to every issue. All of this was a divine blessing. The blessing of guidance was quite clear, and we did not need to constantly refer to him. So we continued to do the same as the leader had told. This should answer that part of your question about our relationship with Ayatollah Khamenei after his election as the leader and the authority for Muslims, after the passing of Imam Khomeini. But regarding the events that happened, it should be noted that the events after the passing of Imam Khomeini were naturally very critical and dangerous. At that time, the important issue for us was to continue the path of resistance in Lebanon, an issue that the leader had emphasized from the outset. The leader provided the officials of the Islamic Republic with many recommendations and words of advice to attend to the resistance in Lebanon and the region, saying that just as during the lifetime of Imam Khomeini, when we followed this path with the thoughts, methods, principles, and culture of Imam Khomeini on our agenda, today I persist on this path and insist on the need for it to continue. Therefore, as a blessing from the Almighty God, there was no change in the position of the Islamic Republic in its support for the resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon, not even in the face of changes within ministries and official entities in Iran, as well as some differences in their political policies. Therefore, not only such a change did not happen, rather, things went on in a better way, because these stances were strengthened after each president's term and each official's term, and this happened as a result of direct attention by the leader to Hezbollah of Lebanon and the resistance in the region. Now we can enter the discussion on the events that took place. Where would you like me to start from? I'm ready. I mean, we can now address the political events, because we have already elaborated on our relationship with the leader and how we kept working with him after the passing of Imam Khomeini. I mean, we can now address the political events because we've already elaborated on our relationship with the leader and how we kept working with him. Now, the most important issue for us at that time, that is, during the leadership of Ayatollah Khamenei, was the issue of domestic problems of Lebanon. At that stage, as you know well, there were some problems between Hezbollah and the Amal movement, and the leader paid special attention to this matter. Hence, the most important thing that happened to us during the early years of Ayatollah Khamenei's leadership was the resolution of discords between Hezbollah and the Amal movement. This blessed resolution was brought about as a result of special guidance and advice by the leader, as well as contacts between the authorities of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the leaders of Hezbollah and the Amal movement, including the current chairman of the Lebanese parliament, Mr. Nabih Berri, and Syrian officials. Subsequently, resistance groups in Lebanon got united, and this was accomplished thanks to the leader and his strong emphasis on unity. The leader opposed any issue, any conflict or dispute among Lebanese groups and constantly stressed the need for extensive relations between them, as well as achieving peace by any means necessary among them. These efforts took years to bear fruit. That is to say, it took 2 or 3 years for us to pass through that stage. The foundation of the close relations between Hezbollah and Amal that we see today were laid by the guidelines of the leader. And today the relationship between Hezbollah and Amal is not strategic, but beyond strategic. Through the resolving of the problems between Hezbollah and the Amal movement and the cooperation between the two, we were able to continue the resistance and attend to defending Lebanon and the south of Lebanon. The achievement and the great victory of 2000 against the Zionist regime were realized as a result of this unity. In 2006, and during the 33-day war of the Zionist regime on southern Lebanon, this unity helped us again, and we were able to resist during the Tammuz War and oppose a defeat on the enemy. Today, political victories in Lebanon and the region continue to be achieved. One of the fundamental factors of Hezbollah's political, national, and military power is this coherence, unity, and friendly relations. I recall that at that time, after the martyrdom of Sayyid Abbas al-Musavi, our brothers chose me as the Secretary General. Later, we met with the leader. He brought up some issues, saying, "If you want to make the heart of Imam Mahdi, may the Almighty God hasten his reappearance, and also the hearts of all the believers happy, you have to work hard to preserve the calm in your country. You have to work with each other, especially Hezbollah, Amal, Allama Fazlullah, and Sheikh Shamsuddin." At that time, Allama Fazlullah and Sheikh Shamsuddin were both alive, and the leader strongly stressed reinforcing internal unity in Lebanon. His emphasis was on maintaining unity among the Shias, as well as between Shias and Sunnis and other Muslims. He also emphasized on the necessity of unity among Muslims and Christians, and would insist on it during internal meetings. That is, he promoted an open-door policy for all Lebanese. This was the second issue. The primary issue was the relationship between Hezbollah, Amal, and the domestic situation of the Shias. Another important issue that he emphasized was the open-door strategy of Hezbollah towards other Lebanese political groups, despite religious, political, and ideological differences. The realization of this important project was also on account of his wise leadership. There was emphasis on continuing the resistance, confronting belligerence and determination to liberate southern Lebanon. That's why the leader also focused on the issue of resistance and its progress. He always insisted that resistance should make progress, grow, and ultimately take back occupied lands. Hence, he always diligently encouraged the resistance to persist on the path it had taken. You know that at that time there was a problem, which some resistance groups other than Hezbollah had got entangled with internal political affairs, and thus they had been gradually distracted from the mission of resistance. This would make the resistance limited to Hezbollah and the Amal movement, chiefly Hezbollah. Even inside Hezbollah, there were some of our brothers who were inclined to get involved with domestic politics. But the leader always emphasized the need to give priority to the mission of resistance and jihadi tasks.